fucked me and done eat my ass and shit like that and done took me out, done got me at the club and got me in the club in Florida, bitch. On some day 305 shit, hoe. Sitting in the club, twisting my leg and dancing on you, licking all up in your ear in front of the man's, bitch. Got people looking at me crazy, thinking, God, I'm calling you my man, bitch. I don't post it on nigga on Snap. I post you on my Snap, girl. We in the pool, hold up. You hugging me and shit like a woman. Like the real woman. Like the woman I am.
I tried to tell Tyree.
Holding me like the woman I am.
Try to tell y'all.
He hugging me like the woman I am, lifting me up in the water. You know the water makes you look light, bitch. So he lifting me up in the water, bitch. He lifting me up, and I'm wrapping my legs right here, bitch. I got my hand right
here. Welcome to the Black Sublime Podcast. This is your motherfucking host, ho. I miss this so much. So incredibly much. Like, I haven't done this shit, bitch. I haven't done this shit in at least a year. And it just feels so good to be back and so juicy and so moist and just so, just everything about it. I'm just, oh my God. You know, it's crazy because, you know, I had to stop doing this pod, bitch. I had to stop for me. And it's no shade, right? It's not like I hated it. I did it because, or at least I stopped because I was doing everything at home. A bitch was doing everything at home and then was doing everything at home. And it was very much... It's a lot of work for one person. And no matter how much I love doing this, because I do, I love it with so much passion. I mean, it's essentially a spiritual practice for me. And I do want to take a couple minutes to reintroduce myself. You know, things have changed a little bit since the last time I was talking my shit. And so I want to do a little bit of that, introduce the podcast to a new audience. But yeah, like I was doing everything at home because it integrated me, right? It made me feel, it brought my art self with my thinking self, with my, like, I will call that philosopher, with me as a lover, me as a friend, me as someone who cares about us. And so it was for my betterment. It was a lot of work too, I'm not going to front. Like, not just work as in the sort of tedium of, you know, technology and shit, but the work of being plugged in to things that are potentially traumatic, that bring you to places that aren't always light, right? So to do that every week, to mine through, to swim through, to wade through that, and emerge with something that I hope is fruitful for you all. It's a lot of motherfucking work, bitch. I'm not gonna lie. So aside from or atop of the logistical, tactical bullshit of that, there was also this emotional and spiritual labor. But... you know, I've got some friends, I've got some partners. I'm working in a community space that's really beautiful in its own right. So shout out to Brick. And yeah, so I want to introduce myself a little bit. You know, I used to go by Mr. Haberdashery. And R.I.P. Mr. Haberdashery. You know, I made that Twitter handle in college. Because a bitch used to dress. I used to be fly, okay? You couldn't tell me nothing. And I invested a lot in... I invested a lot of energy, not necessarily money, into what I looked like, into my clothing. I wanted it to represent a lot and, you know, make space for me and show just my style. And you know, as I got older, I got a little less. I became a little less invested in that project, but I still care and I still put it on. If I gotta put it on, bitches. You know, when I get busy when it comes to that, if I need to, but you know, I need to less and less these days, and I also, you know, bitches looking. So whatever, that's not even. It's fine. We don't gotta do that. Oh God! So I made that handle, went by it. I loved it for years. Friends of mine came up with like Trap Dickens, and I used it as the name for that handle. And I just kept doing that for mad long, and then that was it. But I kind of wanted something that was closer to Aeolus White, the artist, and also close to Anthony White, the person. So I just moved to A White. You know, I mean, I feel like. That's my IG handle, AY. You know, you call me by my name if you have the privilege, all right? No, let me stop. But I feel like there's no need for that. Just be me, just rock with something close to my government. So that's who we are. But yeah, you know, I'm Anthony, aka Aeolus White, aka AY, aka whatever. If I fuck with you, you can call me whatever you want. I, you know, at my spirit, at my core, and there is no, I was about to do some bullshit, like, at my core, I am this, but I feel that I'm an artist and that I want to create and produce things that convey messages beyond and transmit feelings beyond what can be explained through rationale or logic or reason. You know, I care about the sensory experience. I care about how people feel. And not just to make people feel, but I do it because I feel like art is the only way I can be extended in this world, right? Like, I don't feel like I am present aside from through my art, or like art adds a level of presence and, you know, a mark, existence and extension to this world that I can't achieve otherwise. So it's really a way of surviving for me. So there's this artist part of me, there's this philosopher part of me. I studied philosophy in school. I interact with the world through rigorous thought, you know, I, for better or for motherfucking worse, okay, for better or for motherfucking worse, that's how I engage. So I've always cared about that as well. I try, and, you know, there's an aspect of me that cares about building community that is really deeply empathetic, that is deeply social in this way that I care about social structure. I care about intimacy. Love is my primary work. So there's me as lover. And then I would say, I mean, there's me as poet. That's important. The way I use language, I do use it. I do wield it in a funny way. So maybe it's important to highlight me as poet, but and perhaps it's important for me to highlight myself as I'm not gonna say hedonist, but as someone who cares deeply about the sensual experience and prioritizes that as well. I think that's enough. I guess the one thing I should say, and this will go into what I want the podcast to be, why I'm doing it, why I'm bringing it back, is I do care about freedom, right? I mean, freedom, I say love is my primary business. Love is my primary work. That's a priority for me. But I also should mention that I understand it in the context of freedom, and that is the framework that I never shake, that I never forget, that I never set aside, I never deprioritize. You know, I shouldn't say I never deprioritize it, but it's always forming how I, it forms my tone, my approach, my aesthetic. So I care deeply about that. The podcast itself, I already mentioned that, you know, it's an integrated, it's something for me, right? So I do it for me. But I try not to be another nigga with a podcast. I try not to be another hoe with a show. You know what I'm saying? Like, I try not to just give that. I can give that because, you know, it's fun. But I try not to, right? Like, I'm trying to. The initial objective of the show, why I started it way back, was I felt like me as poet, me as thinker, could be uniquely positioned to explain or to convey ways of thinking that I felt were limited to an academic, to academia. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you read about liberation politics, or you read about everything from like racism, patriarchy, all of this, like, oh shit, these words are not words that we use all the time, you know, like I use them all the time, but on average, you know, calling someone a patriarchal asshole is not, it's not a banger, right? Like, no one is like, oh shit, you read me down by calling me a patriarchal asshole. Like, that's not giving what you think is giving. Like, it might give it for me, but it wouldn't even give it for me, frankly. I don't give a fuck. But, you know, it's one of them things that, like, it's not hitting. It's just not hitting, right? Because calling someone patriarchal, that word has its power through a certain type of lexicon, a certain type of study. And regular folk don't have that. And not even just don't have it, it's just not linked to emotion. So even if we have it, you know, that doesn't, calling someone patriarchal is not going to make them change, right? Like, it by itself is not going to make you want to be better, right? It's not the thing that makes... You know what I'm saying? Like, I can call, I'm not going to go, I'm going, but there are people in my life I could call patriarchal, and he's just going to be like, sure. You know, it's not going to move the needle. So I wanted to work on that and do that. So that's what I did. And I also wanted to share my art and build community for people that are like-minded. So I want to do all that shit. And that's kind of why I'm reviving it. I mean, the work still needs to be done. When I stopped doing it, there were a couple of podcasts out there that I fucked with, right? That I listened to, that I liked, that I felt that the people running the pod, they were intelligent enough to kind of do this same work, that I didn't need to be present in this landscape to do this. But I, you know, not to be that girl, not to, you know, but I don't find that to be true. I thought that people were going to be on it, that it was going to exist in this way, that it just hasn't. So shout out to, you know, your girl, I'm back. So I opened the pod with this, you know, as I did, that's the formula. I love the internet for this, specifically for this, because you got to be specific when you say that shit. I love the internet for this, and I don't know who this person is, but that shit was funny as fuck to me. Like, the whole, you know, he fucked me down, he ate my, you lift me up, you know, the water make you light, like, the real woman I am, that shit was hilarious. And, you know, in the future, I'll go back to using humor and, like, breaking that down and bring, you know, extending it to something a bit deeper, but this is the first episode back, so we're gonna do what we do, how we do it. So I just want to start with that. I, of course, started with Make Myself Love Him, the dance remix. That's gonna be what I play, bitch. I used to play the instrumental, but now I'm doing the me singing on it, so you will hear the vocals, the vox. I wanted to go into some things. But I'm going to keep this welcome back short. I'm not going to kill us with things. I'm going to start with something light. Both of these things are heavy. None of it's light. You already know what it is. The holidays are over. You know, the holidays are over. The whole, you know, people are trying to get snatched now. You know, guts are, you know, trying to get restored because, you know, you didn't ate a whole bunch of shit. the guts bubble, the things aren't thinging as they were thinging, you know, in August. So people are engaging in a whole bunch of bullshit to get snatched again. Or, you know, and snatched not just, you know, in fitness. They're trying to get it together. This January shit is crazy. I really don't know why anybody does that, but shout out to y'all. I will never do that. Maybe solidarity I can call it, but I'm good. But yeah, so the girls are doing that. Over the holiday, I was thinking about patterns. You know, I was watching couples therapy. And this is not about couples therapy, right? I'm going to go in. This is really about capitalism, naturally. But I was thinking about patterns, right? And I was reflecting on my role in my family, you know, to the extent that I feel like I love my family. I do. But there are times that I feel like I have to take care, I have to manage the emotional lives of my caretakers throughout my life, right? And it's less so now, actually. But I was reflecting on the pattern of managing the emotional lives of others. It's funny that I work in hospitality, you know, I use my art in a certain way. I think that a lot of it I've used positively, I repurposed in a positive way. I do think, though, as a child, managing the emotional lives of others, as particularly or especially of adults, is nasty work, right? Like, it teaches you a lot of things. And, like, I'm not going to go into attachment styles and all that. We can say that for another episode. But what it taught me, I think I also had a predisposition toward this type of thinking. I think I do have a mind for this type of thinking. But it made me acutely aware of of scarcity, right? I realized that I can't manage their emotions and survive and thrive or, you know, do what I need to do. Like, I can't. It is going to cost me a lot of energy, a lot of effort, a lot of self-esteem, potentially a lot of shit to be in this space and manage their lives. And obviously, a lot of times I had no choice. That's the nature of being a child. But I think I became acutely aware of the trade-off of what I was losing, right? Of the scarcity of my own resource, and the desire or of the need to manage, you know, we'll call it capital in quotes. You know, it's labor, it's emotional, spiritual, whatever. So I started to associate certain types of being social with certain types of effort and needing to everything becoming transactional in a way where it's like, if I'm not getting something that is good for my spirit, so if it's not edifying, if it's not love, if it's not community, then I need to get something, I need to get money or something from it, or it's just not worth it, right? Like, this mentality that's just like, girl, if it's not paying me right, like, and I feel like, you know, I was reflecting on the types of things that, and when I say manage the emotional lives of others, I want to be particular. There's one story that I'll tell that is a little dark and maybe triggering, but, you know, I was like 9 or 10 years old, and there was an elder in my community, like a caretaker of mine, who was contemplating suicide. And I go upstairs, I go to see him, and, you know, he's sitting in the dark, you know, contemplating suicide, and starts talking to me about contemplating suicide, right? So, like, think about this. You're 9 years old, maybe 10. I was no older than 10. And I can actually calculate the exact age I was if I wanted to be petty. But is it worth it? I think I was 9, but I remember the day, the date. I know exactly the date, so that's how I can calculate my age. And I'm sitting there talking to this grown person about suicide, at least like listening to them, trying to, what does a 9-year-old have to say? But I have to say something, right? Because I know that. And I know I have to have space for it. And I know, you know, but like, that's what I mean. So I grew up like that, like a lot of that, a lot of that type of shit. So it was just like impossible tasks. These are like Herculean, impossible tasks for even adults, let alone like children. So I just became this, and I think a lot of people, and I'm sharing it because although my experience was particular, I think there are tons of people, and I see it a lot in Black women, Black girls. I see it a lot in my mother and her stories, how much they manage and they learn to manage early on. So then this, whether or not they're good at managing the trade-offs, like a lot of them are not. So that's the problem, right? Like, I mean, it's a problem either way, reducing interaction to trade-offs and being really good at it, you know, and not, or not being good at it and still being exhausted. You know, I've witnessed so many people be, particularly Black women, engage in this thing, daughters, a lot of daughters, being so disproportionately responsible for managing the emotional, material, financial lives of others, that they be sick all the fucking time. Sick, injured, things coming out of nowhere, their body deteriorating under this thing. So, right, like, it does have real effects. But for me, I became very, like, with the math. The math has to math. The return has to return. So I was thinking about this. There are two stories that I have that I'll tell that are both related to, you know. So I was having like this dinner with a whole bunch of girls, and I was talking about how if you're his side piece, you should get paid for that. You should be compensated at least financially for being a side, you know, because no dick is worth that. Knows that you're not getting invested in, you're not getting love. You might get something like it, and you're not getting community. You might get something like it. You should be paid for that. Anytime you fuck somebody and it's not for love, and if it's not for, I mean, and it's not amazing. It has to be the best quality. It has to be high quality hole, high quality dick, like high quality. It got to be up there for it to be free. Like, I just don't see why, like, you would be, sign up to be subordinated. Like, right? Like, it's not like it's ethical non-monogamy, right? You are a side, like you are not primary, meaning your interests do not matter as much as somebody else's, right? Like, I don't see why you would do that for free. And I was thinking about this because I was like fucking with this guy that, you know, it's an open relationship, and you know, he is a top in his relationship, but, like, is a bottom, like, in real life. I shouldn't say that, but, like, you know, wants to get dug out. And I felt like I should be paid for it because because what I am doing is, like, what I am doing is helping your relationship survive, right? Like, what I am doing is the dick that I'm contributing is helping you be satisfied, and I'm not getting love. I'm not getting community, and the hole that you are giving is fine, but it's not giving all of that. So I feel like I should get a check. And he didn't really agree, so there's that. But, like, so there's no more, we're not doing this anymore. But it's just, like, I'm giving you fantasy. I'm giving you this and you're not giving me, like, it's fine. Like, if I didn't like it, I wouldn't do it at all. But I like money more. And what I like more than money is money and toll. Like, if I'm going to be in this situation, right, I should at least, like, this is crazy. And, like, I just, like, I'm aware why I'm so exacting when it comes to this math, right? Why it's in my mind. And I do think that there is something spiritually correct about it. You know, I do think that, you know, there's this woman, Carolyn Moss, she talks about how we all can be bought or sold for something, but part of being free and part of being, you know, sacred is being able to determine the terms under which you are bought or sold, right? Like, if you have the power to determine those terms for you, it feels different. And a lot of us, this goes back to liberation, right? This goes back to making it political. She's talking about it in a spiritual context or energetic context. But, you know, if you can determine those terms for yourself and you have the space and the resource to be introspective and to know the truth about you, to know the truth about your environment, to have the power to defend your interest, right? And then to be like, okay, I can make this sacrifice or I can make this exchange, then go ahead. But a lot of times, the vast majority of the times, and this goes back to why capitalism is what it is, you know, there's no such thing. You know, it is almost impossible for the average person to have any of that. Anything that I just said, like to make someone a market actor or whatever, is not a thing. Like, our rights are being, you know, our capacity and our power is limited, curtailed, attacked deliberately at every turn. So there is no such thing. But I mean, at least on the individual level, you might be able to be like, you know I'm looking for love. I know I'm looking for belonging. I know I'm looking for respect. You are not offering, I'm not looking for security. What you are offering me is not that. I enjoy what it is because there's pleasure in it. But because I'm offering you what you are looking for, which is the ability to have two bitches, right? You want to have this, you want to feel yourself, you want to lack community, whatever it is, you want to be out here. I'm facilitating that for you, and you are not facilitating something for me. In order for us to continue, I need to be compensated somewhere, somehow. And I think that's fine. You may not choose money, but I would. And sometimes I think, like, I was talking to my therapist about this. I was like, you know, am I actually, like, a sex worker? Like, is that who I, is that my calling? But it's like, I'm not, I like money. So money would be, like, fine. And if, you know, whatever. But, like, whatever it is, it can't be nothing, though. And then I reflected on this, and I was thinking about how I was talking to a lot of women, but they're young women, right? They're not like, because I talked to older women about this, and older, I mean middle-aged, like 50s. Every middle-aged woman that I talked to agreed with me, right? Like, there was not a single middle-aged woman that I talked to about this topic that thought I was crazy. But when I talked to late 20s, early 30s women about this, they were so appalled. Like, oh, you know, you're calling me a sex worker. You're calling me a whore. And it's like, I'm not, maybe, but I don't think those words are bad. And the fact that you are being shocked, your decency is questioned, you know, is the point of patriarchy, right? The idea is to make you want to accept less. The idea is that you should be so protective of your decency that instead of advocating for equal pay or equal exchange or justice or material resource justice, right, you are going to be like, you know what? I know I don't want to be a whore, so I'm not going to ask for money. or I'm not going to demand a certain amount of shit. I'm not saying I'm asking for money, but like demand some, I'm not going to demand material in exchange for my body. I'm going to let him have it for free if he behaves a certain way in my face, even though I know he's betraying my long-term interest. Like, that's crazy to me. But that is what, like, decency and, like, that's what the respectability, that's what it does. So a lot of the, you know, the women slash girls that are still inculcated, right, they still are drinking the Kool-Aid of this type of shit, are shocked to be put in this world where it's like, that's why the Sprinkle Sprinkle lady has a following. The Sprinkle Sprinkle lady, and there's that Indian lady too that's about like, oh, you know, I need my money. Like, I don't know what the fuck her message is, but I've seen some of her clips. That's why they are doing what they're doing, and that's why there's an audience for it. Because ultimately, I'm not saying that they're 100% correct in everything that they say, but ultimately, there does need to be a re-education of femme folk, of people, anybody that's been oppressed, to make us demand material resource in exchange for our time and body. Like, and that's not crazy, right? It's not crazy. And, you know, part of me wanted to make this a longer episode. I do think I'm going to stop here. The next episode will go into some other things that are a bit darker. You know, I can't bring my voice back without talking about the genocide that's going on. I can't do that. And I think there's a lot of complexity there that I wanted to address. And I do want to continue this sacred whore, capital, you know, social, pro-social community conversation as well. I will revisit it probably in episode 3. But episode 2, it will be more about genocide in Palestine. So sorry for, you know, I don't want to trigger anybody, but that is the intention. And, you know, it was absolutely being back right now is like, I can't even explain the joy that it's giving me. I want to play a song. Hold on, let me hop off camera real quick. Yeah, I'm gonna play my last release, or like a couple of releases ago, as the outro music. But thank you for fucking with me. Thank you. I love you all very, very much. Shout out to y'all, and I will see you soon. I looked for love in a place I never find it.